Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to The World Transformed 1.5 on Fast Forward Radio. I'm Phil Bauermaster, and I'm pleased to welcome you to this, the eighth installment of our special series, The World Transformed 1.5, which connects the original World Transformed, which ran from June through August of 2009, to The World Transformed 2, which we've got coming up just a little bit later this year. We've been working our way through the major World Transformed topics, and tonight I'm going to talk about living in a science fiction world. I'm going to start out with a hypothetical. Now, what if you woke up one morning, not in your own bed, but standing fully dressed, let's not complicate things, on the bridge of the USS Enterprise? You're there. You're in the 23rd century. You look ahead and you see the famous view screen with a huge planet looming before the Enterprise. Between the Enterprise and the planet are several more spacecraft, very strange-looking ships that are obviously alien. You hear someone speaking and turn to see Mr. Spock standing at his console making observations. A real alien standing right in front of you. And you're on board a real starship somewhere deep in the galaxy. Assuming that you accepted the experience as real, that you didn't think you were suffering some kind of hallucination, what would your reaction be to finding yourself in this situation? How would you feel? I think it's clear that anyone who had such an experience would be absolutely amazed. To be standing in the middle of a science fiction story, a world that before you knew only as a work of imagination, a world where imagination has become reality. It would be astounding beyond measure. Now, let's compare that experience with someone else placed in exactly the same circumstances. Let's say instead of you standing there looking at an alien planet, trying to make sense of what the alien spaceships are doing, listening to what Mr. Spock has to say, it's none other than James Tiberius Kirk. How would he react to facing these same circumstances? Well, it would be different, wouldn't it? Captain Kirk would be highly focused on what's happening with the planet and what's happening with those spaceships. He'd be listening very carefully to what Mr. Spock is saying and planning a course of action. He'd be all about the details, details that you would have barely noticed, not understood, or missed altogether. The biggest difference between his reaction and yours is that he would not be the least bit amazed. The planet, the aliens, Mr. Spock, they're all in a day's work for Captain Kirk. He lives in a science fiction world and doesn't realize it. And Captain Kirk is not alone. We too live in a fantastic world, a world where artifacts of the imagination have been made real time and time again. We are surrounded by things that were once nothing more than fantasies. We regularly engage in activities that our fairly recent ancestors could barely imagine or never imagined. Now, this idea was captured in an exchange between comedian Louis C.K. and talk show host Conan O'Brien a few years ago. You've probably heard some of this before.
Do you feel that we now, in the 21st century, we take technology for granted?
Well, yeah, because now we live in an amazing, amazing world, and it's wasted on the crappiest generation of just spoiled idiots that don't care, because this is what people are like now. They got their phone, and they're like, it won't... Give it a second! It's going to space! Can you give it a second to get back from space? Is the speed of light too slow for you? I was on an airplane, and there was internet, high-speed internet on the airplane. That's the newest thing that I know exists. And I'm sitting on the plane, and they go, open up your laptop, you can go on the internet. And it's fast, and I'm watching YouTube clips. I'm in an airplane. And then it breaks down. And they apologize, the internet's not working. The guy next to me goes, this is bullshit. Like, how quickly the world owes him something he knew existed only 10 seconds ago.
Right, right.
And on planes... Flying is the worst one because people come back from flights and they tell you their story. And it's like a horror story. They act like their flight was like a cattle car in the 40s in Germany. That's how bad they make it sound.
Right.
They're like, it was the worst day of my life. First of all, we didn't board for 20 minutes.
Right.
And then we get on the plane, and they made us sit there on the runway for 40 minutes. We had to sit there. Oh, really? What happened next? Did you fly through the air incredibly like a bird? Did you partake in the miracle of human flight, you non-contributing zero, that you got to fly? You're flying! It's amazing! Everybody on every plane should just constantly be going, oh my God! Wow! Yeah! You're flying! You're sitting in a chair in the sky.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But it doesn't go back a lot. And it's not really... You know, here's the thing. People, like, they say there's delays on flights.
Yeah.
Delays, really? New York to California in 5 hours. That used to take 30 years to do that. And a bunch of you would die on the way there and have a baby. You'd be a whole different group of people by the time you got there. Now you watch a movie and you take a dump in your home.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think it's important for us to reflect on how far we've come. And once in a while, we should take a moment just to be amazed by the world we live in, the things that we're able to do, the problems that our ancestors had that we will never face, and the amazing possibilities that are open to us. Once in a while, we should stop and be amazed. And we should observe how much we tend to be like the guy who suddenly felt he was entitled to Wi-Fi service on the airplane. We are surrounded by technologies that are unique and novel for a very brief period of time, and which then become indispensable. I was watching TV with my 2-year-old this morning. The TV we have in the bedroom has rabbit ears and receives a broadcast signal. My daughter was not thrilled by the programming that was available, and she started rattling off the titles of programs that she would like to hear, names that would be familiar to anyone who has a small child around the house: Pingu, Kipper, Caillou. Because she's 2, I wasn't able to make her understand that this TV only plays a live feed signal, that we can't look items up on it and access whatever we want the way we can on the other TVs in the house. Those other televisions are connected to a satellite receiver in a Roku box, so the options there are pretty broad. The bedroom TV does have a DVD player built in, but since we've been using Roku for the program she likes, we don't even have discs to play that contain any of the shows that she's interested in. Of course, it's different for my daughter. A world where everything is on demand all the time is the world she was born into. She's like Captain Kirk on the bridge of the Enterprise. She's never had to adjust to some things that were major steps forward for most of us, certainly for me. But in the end, it doesn't matter. Although I can recognize the progress from broadcast TV to cable, from VCRs to Blu-ray to everything on demand from the internet, I'm no more patient with not having the technology I want when I want it than that guy sitting next to Louis C.K. on the plane. So, in addition to trying to appreciate the things we already have, I think it's important for us to appreciate the things we're going to have now, while we can still be amazed by them. Because when we finally do have them, when we're finally living in that next generation science fiction world, we will appreciate them no more than my daughter appreciates our Roku box, which to her is just about as extraordinary as the Ottoman. They're both just items she likes and expects that they will be there in the family room. And why wouldn't they? With that in mind, let's review some of the things that we'll be completely unamazed by one day soon. When we live in a world where every human being has access to adequate housing, clean water, clothing, and enough to eat, we will not be amazed by that fact in the least. Last week, I talked about the make-it-yourself world, a world where ultimately anyone with a computer can produce just about any physical goods, in the same way today a person with a computer can reproduce just about any document. Improvements in materials and information technology will set off a virtuous cycle by which advanced materials technology will ultimately become true molecular nanotechnology on the desktop. As that occurs, the 3D printer will evolve into the personal desktop fabricator, and finally, a true replicator that Captain Kirk himself would take for granted. What do you need? Some shoes, a sandwich, a new car? They will all be just a few keystrokes away, as amazing as that sounds. Such technology will allow things like water filtration systems to be universally available. One of the simplest ways to fight disease and mortality worldwide is simply to make sure everyone has clean drinking water. Today, simple filtration systems are already being made widely available in regions of the world where they're most needed, at a cost of a few dollars each. I remember being astounded when I heard about these new filters for the first time a few years ago. But, you know, they're just not that impressive anymore, even though hundreds of thousands or millions of lives have already been saved. We may well get to the scenario where everyone has clean drinking water well ahead of the make-it-yourself revolution. But don't worry, if that happens, no one will be all that impressed. The make-it-yourself world will enable far more than just food, clothing, and shelter. A machine that can produce anything can produce medicine and medical equipment in such abundance that we will barely be able to remember that there was once a world where such things were scarce. Telepresence technology is one possible solution for delivering these benefits to all who need them. Ad hoc open source universities might be another. Every village in the world can have an expertly trained and fully equipped doctor, or more likely a team of doctors. They'll all come from right there in the village. All it will take is an internet connection and a laptop, or more likely a smartphone. Pick your brightest kids, the ones most interested in helping out, and let them at it. Ultimately, artificial intelligence might take even the kids out of the loop, with each village or each family or each individual producing his, her, its, their own medical robot with the combined skills of tens of thousands of human doctors. This will all occur in a world where we have not only stopped damaging the environment, but where we have begun to correct much of the previous damage, including restoring extinct species to their restored habitats. It will occur in a world where full immersion virtual reality technology will enable us to experience anything, anything we can imagine, and a lot of things we currently can't imagine. It will occur in a world where we have all but eliminated disease and tremendously extended human lifespan, perhaps to the point of indefinite. It will occur in a world where the AIs won't just be our doctors, they will be our teachers, our friends, our helpers, our companions, and very likely our leaders. Moreover, it's entirely possible that we won't even see a division between us and them as we merge into one vast, post-human, but still entirely human society. Does this all sound too good to be true? Too fantastic to be believed? Well, you don't have to worry about that. By the time it all gets here, you won't be impressed by it at all. Please join us Monday for an archive show. We're dipping once again back into February 2008, Stephen and myself talking about existential risk. On Wednesday evening, the live show is a surprise, meaning that we've not lined up a guest, and Stephen and I haven't talked about the topic yet, but it will be fascinating, so I hope that you'll all be able to join us. 1 week from tonight, I'll continue with part 9 of The World Transformed 1.5. Well, I certainly hope that you'll be able to join us for all of our upcoming programs, and until next time, live to see it. You're listening to The World Transformed 1.5. Today's program will repeat in about 30 seconds. Live to see it, friends. You're listening to The World Transformed 1.5 on Fast Forward Radio. I'm Phil Bauermaster, and I'm pleased to welcome you to this, the 8th installment of our special series, The World Transformed 1.5, which connects the original World Transformed, which ran from June through August of 2009, to the World Transformed 2, which we've got coming up just a little bit later this year. We've been working our way through the major World Transformed topics, and tonight I'm going to talk about living in a science fiction world. I'm going to start out with a hypothetical. Now, what if you woke up one morning, not in your own bed, but standing fully dressed, let's not complicate things, on the bridge of the USS Enterprise? You're there. You're in the 23rd century. You look ahead and you see the famous view screen with a huge planet looming before the Enterprise. Between the Enterprise and the planet are several more spacecraft, very strange-looking ships that are obviously alien. You hear someone speaking and turn to see Mr. Spock standing at his console making observations, a real alien standing right in front of you, and you're on board a real starship somewhere deep in the galaxy. Assuming that you accepted the experience as real, that you didn't think you were suffering some kind of hallucination, what would your reaction be to finding yourself in this situation? How would you feel? I think it's clear that anyone who had such an experience would be absolutely amazed to be standing in the middle of a science fiction story, a world that before you knew only as a work of imagination, a world where imagination has become reality. It would be astounding beyond measure. Now, let's compare that experience with someone else placed in exactly the same circumstances. Let's say instead of you standing there looking at an alien planet, trying to make sense of what the alien spaceships are doing, listening to what Mr. Spock has to say, it's none other than James Tiberius Kirk. How would he react to facing these same circumstances? Well, it would be different, wouldn't it? Captain Kirk would be highly focused on what's happening with the planet and what's happening with those spaceships. He'd be listening very carefully to what Mr. Spock is saying and planning a course of action. He'd be all about the details, details that you would have barely noticed, not understood, or missed altogether. The biggest difference between his reaction and yours is that he would not be the least bit amazed. The planet, the aliens, Mr. Spock, they're all in a day's work for Captain Kirk. He lives in a science fiction world and doesn't realize it. And Captain Kirk is not alone. We too live in a fantastic world, a world where artifacts of the imagination have been made real time and time again. We are surrounded by things that were once nothing more than fantasies. We regularly engage in activities that our fairly recent ancestors could barely imagine or never imagined. Now, this idea was captured in an exchange between comedian Louis C.K. and talk show host Conan O'Brien a few years ago. You've probably heard some of this before.
Do you feel that we now, in the 21st century, we take technology for granted?
Well, yeah, because now we live in an amazing, amazing world, and it's wasted on the crappiest generation of just spoiled idiots that don't care, because this is what people are like now. They got their phone, and they're like, ugh, it won't... Give it a second! It's going to space! Can you give it a second to get back from space? Is the speed of light too slow for you? I was on an airplane, and there was internet, high-speed internet on the airplane. That's the newest thing that I know exists. And I'm sitting on the plane, and they go, open up your laptop, you can go on the internet. And it's fast, and I'm watching YouTube clips. I'm in an airplane. And then it breaks down. And they apologize, the internet's not working. The guy next to me goes, this is bullshit. Like, how quickly the world owes him something he knew existed only 10 seconds ago.
Right. Right.
And on planes, flying is the worst one because people come back from flights and they tell you their story. And it's like a horror story. They act like their flight was like a cattle car in the 40s in Germany. That's how bad they make it sound.
Right.
They're like, it was the worst day of my life. First of all, we didn't board for 20 minutes. Right. And then we get on the plane, and they made us sit there on the runway for 40 minutes. We had to sit there. Oh, really? What happened next? Did you fly through the air incredibly like a bird? Did you partake in the miracle of human flight, you non-contributing zero, that you got to fly? You're flying! It's amazing! Everybody on every plane should just constantly be going, oh my God! Wow!
Yeah!
You're flying. Your sitting in a chair in the sky.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But it doesn't go back a lot. and it's
Share
not really... You know, here's the thing. People, like, they say there's delays on flights.
Yeah.
Delays, really? New York to California in 5 hours. That used to take 30 years to do that. And a bunch of you would die on the way there and have a baby. You'd be a whole different group of people by the time you got there. Now you watch a movie and you take a dump in your home.
Absolutely. I think it's important for us to reflect on how far we've come. And once in a while, we should take a moment just to be amazed by the world we live in, the things that we're able to do, the problems that our ancestors had that we will never face, and the amazing possibilities that are open to us. Once in a while, we should stop and be amazed. And we should observe how much we tend to be like the guy who suddenly felt he was entitled to Wi-Fi service on the airplane. We are surrounded by technologies that are unique and novel for a very brief period of time, and which then become indispensable. I was watching TV with my two-year-old this morning. The TV we have in the bedroom has rabbit ears and receives a broadcast signal. My daughter was not thrilled by the programming that was available, and she started rattling off the titles of programs that she would like to hear, names that would be familiar to anyone who has a small child around the house: Pingu, Kipper, Caillou. Because she's two, I wasn't able to make her understand that this TV only plays a live feed signal, that we can't look items up on it and access whatever we want the way we can on the other TVs in the house. Those other televisions are connected to a satellite receiver in a Roku box, so the options there are pretty broad. The bedroom TV does have a DVD player built in, but since we've been using Roku for the program she likes, we don't even have discs to play that contain any of the shows that she's interested in. Of course, it's different for my daughter. A world where everything is on demand all the time is the world she was born into. She's like Captain Kirk on the bridge of the Enterprise. She's never had to adjust to some things that were major steps forward for most of us, certainly for me. But in the end, it doesn't matter. Although I can recognize the progress from broadcast TV to cable, from VCRs to Blu-ray to everything on demand from the internet, I'm no more patient with not having the technology I want when I want it than that guy sitting next to Louis C.K. on the plane. So, in addition to trying to appreciate the things we already have, I think it's important for us to appreciate the things we're going to have now, while we can still be amazed by them. Because when we finally do have them, when we're finally living in that next generation science fiction world, we will appreciate them no more than my daughter appreciates our Roku box, which to her is just about as extraordinary as the ottoman. They're both just items she likes and expects that they will be there in the family room. And why wouldn't they? With that in mind, let's review some of the things that we'll be completely unamazed by one day soon. When we live in a world where every human being has access to adequate housing, clean water, clothing, and enough to eat, we will not be amazed by that fact in the least. Last week, I talked about the make-it-yourself world, a world where ultimately anyone with a computer can produce just about any physical goods, in the same way today a person with a computer can reproduce just about any document. Improvements in materials and information technology will set off a virtuous cycle by which advanced materials technology will ultimately become true molecular nanotechnology on the desktop. As that occurs, the 3D printer will evolve into the personal desktop fabricator, and finally, a true replicator that Captain Kirk himself would take for granted. What do you need? Some shoes, a sandwich, a new car? They will all be just a few keystrokes away, as amazing as that sounds. Such technology will allow things like water filtration systems to be universally available. One of the simplest ways to fight disease and mortality worldwide is simply to make sure everyone has clean drinking water. Today, simple filtration systems are already being made widely available in regions of the world where they're most needed, at a cost of a few dollars each. I remember being astounded when I heard about these new filters for the first time a few years ago. But, you know, they're just not that impressive anymore, even though hundreds of thousands or millions of lives have already been saved. We may well get to the scenario where everyone has clean drinking water well ahead of the make-it-yourself revolution. But don't worry, if that happens, no one will be all that impressed. The make-it-yourself world will enable far more than just food, clothing, and shelter. A machine that can produce anything can produce medicine and medical equipment in such abundance that we will barely be able to remember that there was once a world where such things were scarce. Telepresence technology is one possible solution for delivering these benefits. to all who need them. Ad hoc open source universities might be another. Every village in the world can have an expertly trained and fully equipped doctor, or more likely a team of doctors. They'll all come from right there in the village. All it will take is an internet connection and a laptop, or more likely a smartphone. Pick your brightest kids, the ones most interested in helping out, and let them at it. Ultimately, artificial intelligence might take even the kids out of the loop, with each village or each family or each individual producing his, her, its, their own medical robot with the combined skills of tens of thousands of human doctors. This will all occur in a world where we have not only stopped damaging the environment, but where we have begun to correct much of the previous damage, including restoring extinct species to their restored habitats. It will occur in a world where full immersion virtual reality technology will enable us to experience anything. Anything we can imagine, and a lot of things we currently can't imagine. It will occur in a world where we have all but eliminated disease and tremendously extended human lifespan, perhaps to the point of indefinite. It will occur in a world where the AIs won't just be our doctors. They will be our teachers, our friends, our helpers, our companions, and very likely our leaders. Moreover, it's entirely possible that we won't even see a division between us and them as we merge into one vast, post-human, but still entirely human society. Does this all sound too good to be true? Too fantastic to be believed? Well, you don't have to worry about that. By the time it all gets here, you won't be impressed by it at all. Please join us Monday for an archive show. We're dipping once again back into February 2008, Stephen and myself talking about existential risk. On Wednesday evening, the live show is a surprise, meaning that we've not lined up a guest, and Stephen and I haven't talked about the topic yet, but it will be fascinating, so I hope that you'll all be able to join us. 1 week from tonight, I'll continue with part 9 of The World Transformed 1.5. Well, I certainly hope that you'll be able to join us for all of our upcoming programs. And until next time, live to see it.